When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, my buddy, my pal, my one-time shipmate on a cruise, Shannon Shaw from Shannon and the Clams, is here today on the show. And this is a fun conversation with someone who I haven't got a chance to speak to in a very long time, so we get to catch up a little bit. You'll hear that in 1 second. But first, if you would like to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will give the message to me. He also runs a Facebook page, an Instagram page. There's a TikTok page and a YouTube page, all those for at Turned Into Punk, and all those can be found at Turned Into Punk on those platforms. I probably forgot one there. I'm on Twitter or Instagram at Left for Damien. Support the show by telling all your friends about it. Check out the band I play in. We're called Fucked Up. You can find out more information over at fuckedup.cc. You can tell my voice that I've been yelling. So I've been yelling for a couple different things, but I've been yelling. You can find out more about what I yell about, if you don't know, over at fuckedup.cc. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, Shannon is on the show. Shannon is someone I have not seen or had a chance to talk to in a very long time. Years ago, I guess I met Shannon before this, but I have a very distinct memory of showing up at the Bruise Cruise that my band Fucked Up played with the OCs, King Khan and the Shrines, the Dirt Bombs, who else was playing? It was crazy. It was an incredible lineup with, everyone was incredible. Shannon's band, the Togas, were playing with Ty Segall, and it was, anyway, we were not really in our, Fucked Up's always a sore thumb, you know, we always kind of stick out a little bit, and so we didn't really kind of fit in with the garage rock kind of vibe, and everyone was incredible. Like, the bands were unbelievable, but we kind of, you know, a little bit of a third wheel kind of thing. But Shannon came over to me and, you know, we started talking and made us feel really welcome. And yeah, we've been kind of, friends ever since, I mean, but like, I haven't really talked. So I've been watching from afar as she's kind of ascended to this incredible, well, she's always been incredible, but like ascended to this place in music where she's headlining shows and has this unbelievable fan base for her, and it's been a heavy journey too, and she talks a lot about that in other interviews. I'm sure you'll be hearing about that a lot. There's a lot to do with that on the new record. The Moon is in the Wrong Place. It is a very heavy record, and yeah, a beautiful record, and a really stunning tribute to Joe, someone Shannon was engaged to. This is a very heavy story, and I don't really want to just gloss over it. So please check out more information at ShannonandTheClams.com. There's a big write-up in sort of the history of what went into making this record, and it's very, very heavy. But Rest in peace, Joe Hayner. And now, we don't talk about this in the episode. We talk about a lot of other things, and this is a very fun episode. So, didn't mean to hit you with something super heavy before you listen, but it's life. So enjoy it while you're here. And for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy Shannon Shaw from Shannon and the Clams on Turned Out a Punk. Shannon, so good to see you again.
It is so good to see you. It's been a long time.
I think it's like 13 years.
No, since I saw you?
Maybe slightly, yes, but it's got to be at least 10 years, right?
Eight years? Probably. I was trying to think of the last time I saw you. Maybe, did you do that festival in Missoula?
No. No, we only been in Missoula one time, I think. And it was just we played a show on the same day the Grateful Dead were playing. And there was like a Grateful Dead viewing party, which was better attended than the fucked up show.
Oh, no. No way.
Yes. Yes way. Yeah. Yes way. And probably better drugs there, to be honest. So I might choose there, too.
People watching.
Yes, exactly. Because I was listening to you on a podcast, and the person asked you this question on there, which was, where's the weirdest place you've ever played a show?
Whoa, what did I say?
I think you said, you were like, oh, I played a boat one time in Sweden or somewhere in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And then there was somewhere else I forget what the other place you said you played, but...
Was it a chocolate factory in Switzerland?
Yes, it was. I think that's the other place. Both great answers, but I think you forgot about the strangest place that I've ever played a show with you, the Bruise Cruise.
Oh my God, is that the last place I saw you?
I think that might have been, I think I saw you after that one time in maybe LA at a festival, but yeah, the Bruise Cruise was definitely... We've cruised together.
We've cruised together. I'm really glad you reminded me of that. That has had a really weird resounding impact on my life. I have some like lifelong friendships from that. Yeah, that is a strange time in my life.
Not to undercut it being a strange time in your life, but yeah, definitely for me as well. I feel like it was a strange time in my life. And yeah, a tour wasn't a tour, right? It was like a cruise.
We turned ours into a tour. Cause I was doing, this cover band called the Togas that Ty Siegel formed. So it was just me, Ty, Philip from the Strange Boys and Lance Willie from Raining Sound. So, and we wore togas. I don't know if you actually saw us.
Yes, but, I did.
It was the first panic attack I'd ever had, ever, was when we played Senor Frogs on Nassau in the Bahamas. And do you want me to tell this?
Go, story? Please, absolutely.
Okay. So, yeah, basically, when I play music, it's like I have to work really hard to getting like bass lines down and stuff, especially cover songs. And we had things on our set list like Bernadette, you know, insane bass lines, way too hard for me. But I spent like 1 month straight getting ready for this Togas tour Bruise Cruise thing. I worked so hard getting down all these different bass lines. We were doing like the River Deep Mountain High, the Tina version, and just all these songs. And I spent so much time getting ready. Now, Ty's like a boy wonder, as we all know. He can just remember things by ear and be able to like shred it. For me, I don't work that way. So like the day of the show, he changed the set list and added all these songs. And I wanted to cry because I was just so like, no, you don't understand, Ty. It takes me a really long time. But I didn't want to like be the squeaky wheel either. I just wanted to be like this cool, like person that rolls with the punches and can like pull it off. But we rehearsed once with these brand new songs and I'm freaking out. And then we're getting off the ship to go to Senor Frog's. And as we're exiting, they tell us that we need visas because we had instruments. They could tell we were going to go play. And we are supposed to be on stage in like 30 minutes. And did you see Senor Frog's? You have to like deboard, walk through that really depressing market, and then it's like a half an hour walk from there. It gets us down to the wire that we're finally able to exit the ship. And then they're like, sorry guys, you have to run full blast all the way to Senor Frog's if you want to play this show. I'm not like a runner. I'm more of like a puncher or something, but I'm not like a full speed runner. And everyone's like screaming that we have to run. And I don't know if you remember, but like the docks that we walk to get to Senor Frog's had like these crazy waves that were splashing over the dock. So we're getting splashed. I'm afraid I'm gonna get like swept out to sea. And I'm wearing a toga just to remind you and everyone else. And we get there and they're like, get on stage now. We have to cut songs. It's so stressful. I get on stage, I'm sweating profusely. And the three people that I can see standing in front of me, now I'm thinking you were probably there too, but it was like, Kip from TV on the Radio. Well, I can't remember his name right now. Oh, Jello Biafra and Neil Hamburger. They're just the three of them happened to be standing in front of me, which did not help my anxiety. And then the sweat is like, I've never sweated like this before. It's all putrid smelling because it's, anxiety. And we have to play Little Red Book, and that's one that I sang. And playing that bass line and singing is very hard. And I totally ruined it. And the whole time I was like, Neil Hamburger's gonna make fun of me on stage. I'm gonna become the bit. And I just got all obsessed. And then when we got off stage, I was just like outside, literally hanging out in a plant, inside like a giant, beautiful jungle plant. And then to make things worse, that set off like a multiple day serious bout of extreme anxiety because the next day our like tour started and we went to Atlanta and we were playing. Ty added in Helter Skelter, which luckily for me, I don't have to sing at all, and all I do is basically play the top string. And so I was really anxious and bored and feeling so awkward on stage because it's already a long song. And then he like extended the guitar solo so he could get crowd surfed around, which is cool, but I couldn't manage my anxiety. So I like jump off stage during this solo and I go get a shot of tequila at the bar. And as I'm waiting for this shot, I'm getting this hard poke. Someone's poking me. It is so fucking annoying. And I like just finish the shot and I run back to stage. And then we've finished the set. I go back to get another shot. And the poke is back. I turn around and go, what the fuck do you want? It's Andre 3000. And I'm like, no way. Why? I just like couldn't believe that he was poking me of all the people in the room to poke. And he was so nice and was like, hey, I just was trying to like say, hey, your name's Shannon, right? And I was like, no, why do you know my name? Like, I could not handle it. And he was like, whoa, calm down, calm down. I asked like around who you were because you were awesome. You have such a cool voice. And like, I have some questions. And I was like, you Ty's over there. That's the person you want to talk to. And he's like, who's Ty? And I was like, oh shit.
Oh, that's
Zing.
awesome.
And I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know what I just like could not handle that someone like him would give a rat's ass about me. But he, I like ruined, this is like one of, this is the biggest regret in my life. And it's funny because the Oriole works with Andre 3000. So to me, it's almost like maybe a full circle is almost there.
Yeah.
But he was like, kept being like, hey, calm down, just like be chill. 'Cause I was acting crazy. I was like so starstruck, trying to get rid of myself so hard. And he like would not let that happen. He was like, no, you're amazing. I heard you live in San Francisco. And I was like, oh, technically I live in Oakland. And he was like, okay, that's like 15 minutes away. And I was like, no, okay, yeah, you're right, sir. And he's like, well, I'm gonna be recording there in 2 months. Are you gonna be in town? I was like, yeah, I'll be in town. He's like, well, how do I get in touch with you? And I, this is where I ruined everything because I was so afraid of seeming eager or afraid. I think like my Mormon background was really sabotaging me, trying to tell me, like, there's no way this person is really interested in working with you. They just feel bad for you. They just feel bad for you and are trying to make you feel better. So I was like, yeah, well, like, yeah, you could just and he's like, can I get your contact info or something? And I was like, yeah, totally. Yeah, you could just like Google me. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, you could Google me. And he's like, you want me to Google you? And I was like, oh God, I guess so. Yeah, you just like Google my band and then you could find me that way. And he's like, okay, you want me to remember your band's name and you want me to just Google you until I'm able to find a way to get in touch with you. Am I getting this right? And I'm like, oh my God, I suck. I hate myself. And then right when I'm about to be like, let me get a piece of paper and write down my email, he gets mobbed. Like finally all these people see who I'm talking to and start like it just gets taken over by a sea of fans. And he's like, I'm sorry, I gotta go. I'm like, wait, don't go. And then he left. That's
Oh,
it.
no.
Sorry, this was a long intro to me.
That's an amazing story, though. That is a sad but unbelievably awesome story. Because.
Is. Sorry, I choked on my own spit.
No, I get it. I get all of that because I feel like there's a need to kind of self-sabotage a little bit at times
Why?
when.
Why? Why do we feel that way?
I don't know. Like, I think you're, maybe it is like, not that I was raised Mormon or anything, but maybe it's sort of this like thing that was instilled in us as young people that we have to be forcibly humble in the face of someone, or we have to dismiss something someone's saying to us and like be like, no, but you know, make a joke of it or just brush it off instead of like, you know, taking it on in that moment. But
Yeah.
him Googling you is the best. That's
And I think he was trying to give me a final chance. Like, this is truly what you want me to do? And it's like, of course he's not gonna do that. I mean, he's cool and he thought I was cool, but I'm sure he didn't think I was that cool. And I was so annoying. I was so annoying. I've learned so much. I've grown so much from that. I need to hit my inhaler. I know you thought I was a
Please.
punk, but now you know I'm an ex-Mormon and I have asthma.
Well, neither of those preclude you from being into punk rock. I promise you that.
It makes me more punk,
Yeah.
actually.
Yeah. I think anyone, well, I think that's the thing is this can provide you know, an escape hatch from sort of these imposed morals on us, be it religion or be it parental things or like imposed cultures on us. Like I, you know, going into this, I used to have such a different opinion about like Christian rock or Christian punk, I should say, where I was like, oh, it's like an indoctrination thing. They're trying to indoctrinate all these kids. But having done this podcast, I'm like, well, no, it's also an escape hatch for kids that are looking for something outside of
this religious culture that their parents are kind of putting them on. So, yeah, like it just completely gave me a new perspective on religion and its kind of like role on people's lives.
I love that. I am so happy that I'm someone who's always open to being like humbled and gaining perspective and learning. I feel like that's been my favorite thing about getting older is like learning that I don't know shit. I don't know anything. And to always have an open mind and I don't know. I'm glad you said that.
I feel like there's like the one positive thing about getting all the negative reviews at a certain point online and just stuff about the band and is that it kind of was like this death of ego thing where, you know, I don't need to be like, as a young person, I held on to this thing so much and the definition that I had of this thing was so important to me. But now I'm like, why is my version of this any more valid than anyone else's version of this? And why is my experience, you know, more?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
Back to the Bruise Cruise. I also suffered a nervous breakdown on the Bruise Cruise as well.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why?
I had recently gone off my anti-anxiety pills and
oh shit,
switched to cannabis as my medication. And now I can kind of, you know, meditate my way through it. But at that point I was like, what am I going to do? Not being able to smoke weed on a cruise ship. And we played that first night. I didn't have cannabis. I was very tired and my wife was pregnant and we left our younger child at home. So, you know, I was dealing with like all sorts of things. And then we had to go on after King Khan and the Shrines and the OC.
Was this at the Sailor, at the like Sailor Jerry's or like PBR? Is this in Miami still?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That first night. I totally remember this. They yeah. really, that, yeah. Okay.
they destroyed us. Like we went out yeah. there and it was like I was singing into nothing. Like I felt like we were like an acoustic band having to go on after the Who.
Oh my God, no.
It was brutal. And I don't blame anyone for walking out of that show. But then I met you and you gave me a toga shirt, which I still have. I meant to put it on, but I had to come from this kid's school, so I didn't have a chance to put it on.
Oh my God, you still have that.
Still have that shirt you gave me. And you're like, it's double XL. And I'm like, oh, amazing, because no one gave me shirts that fit me. And right. you were like, I'm really stoked to meet you. And I was like, because up until that point, I felt like we were at someone else's party in a way, because it was like, you know, we knew the Strange Boys and we knew Soft playing as well. And we knew Ty a little bit, but like, it felt like it wasn't necessarily our scene, but you made me feel so awesome and welcome. And then because we got blown off the stage that night, when we did play Senior Froggies with you in the Bahamas, I got destroyed drunk to deal with my anxiety. And I thought you guys were fucking awesome, but I was also very drunk.
That's amazing. That's funny. I always thought you were a sober person, like a never been a drinker guy or a smoker.
I was straight edge for like 10 years, but then at 30,
oh, okay.
Yeah, after having a kid, I started smoking weed and
yeah,
I don't drink at all, but I did that night at Senior Froggies. Like they,
remember they how do you not?
Well, they kept interrupting our set to enter. Yeah, exactly. They're handing out shots during our set.
Yeah, right. Oh my God, that's so true. I'm really glad you have that memory of me. I've always looked up to you a lot. And actually my ex-boyfriend Max, who I think you might know Max, he was in Uzi Rash and the Trashies.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. Oh, absolutely. I certainly know yeah. the bands. I think I must have met Max, absolutely.
I'm sure you've met him, but he introduced me to your band a long time ago and gave me a 7-inch from 1234 Go Records that I still have that has like a black bird on it. That
Oh, The
song.
Triumph of Life, 7-inch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I still have that.
Oh, that's
But
awesome.
he introduced me to you a long time ago, just like not like in person shaking hands or something, but I can't remember where the first time I saw you was, but I always loved you because you're really different than other people like in the scene I was in. Like I was in like a kind of the garage rock scene. I mean, clams have never really fit in anywhere, and in a way that makes us like fit in everywhere if we want to. And but it took me a long time to get that perspective. I just always felt like we didn't fit in. We're not just a garage band. We're not just a punk band. We're definitely not a rockabilly band, and we are not a doo-wop band. But anyway, all I'm saying is the way you were different was you are so fucking nice and warm and make everyone feel welcome. Like you've never, I've probably seen you like 8 or 9 times, and you always make people feel good and they're in your club. And also, we don't see too many husky punks, you know? That's not like a common thing at all. And you just always like ooze this like kindness and confidence. And then actually meeting you and you being like just as like kind and welcoming made me feel good, because a lot of the times you meet someone and they're actually like a piece of shit or whatever, but you've always been so nice and welcoming and inclusive, and I've always felt really comfortable around you, so thank you for that.
Well, thank you for that. Oh my gosh, that is too kind of you. And I, yeah, I feel, I don't know. I'm trying not to brush that off by making a joke right now. After you said that, because it was, yeah, really kind. But I've always been a fan of what you do too. And I feel like you were saying at that point, kind of around that time of that cruise, it felt like the last vestiges of that genre thing was breaking down. Like it used to be like, oh, there's hardcore, there's garage punk, there's punk. But it feels like in the early 2000s that was kind of beginning to break away, and now by this point I don't think genre matters really as much, or at least from an outside perspective. I'm not as into shows as I used to be, obviously.
It does not matter to me.
But it was well, I guess I got to get to the first question that I'm supposed to ask off the top, which is, Shannon, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the word?
Okay, so there's like a few points where I realized that they were kind of like life-changing. It made me start thinking that direction, or like, okay, so this one might be unexpected, but it's a Sesame Street. I feel like it kind of sums me up in this way, where it's a Sesame Street episode where they do like one of the music bits called Wet Paint. Wet paint, wet. You gotta maybe show your kids or just watch it for yourself.
I gotta watch for
But
myself.
it's these like punk Muppets that are like making a mess with wet paint. And I just remember like the song being so catchy and cool, and they looked so cool to me. And then it's, I don't think it's the same episode, but it's around that same time of Sesame Street. There was a song called I've Got a New Way to Walk. And it's these like girl cows, and it's kind of, it's like a girl group of cows, and it's like, I've got a new way to walk, walk, walk. And it's just kind of like an oldies song. And I remember feeling like, this is my shit right here. These two, I love these songs. And I'm probably like 4 or 5 when I saw these two videos that have like struck me forever. And I've looked them up many times, you know, since then, to be like, why did I think that the New Way to Walk song was like so badass? It's, but I feel like that was kind of the beginning. And then my dad, when we were kids, my parents got divorced, and my dad kind of didn't know how to entertain us because he'd always been the one to like to work. He was a fire captain, so he was gone all the time on these fires all over California. And then my mom was a stay-at-home mom with all these little kids. And so when my dad had us, he did not know what to do with a pile of kids. His ex-wife always did that. So he would just like drive us to Berkeley or drive us to San Francisco and maybe take us to like a mission or a few free museum or like Coit Tower or something. But on the way there and on the way back, he liked to cruise us up Telegraph Avenue to the university or take us up Haight Street to like, I think, Freak Watch. So he would be like, well, let's go for a spin to Berserkly and drive us up Telegraph and just like look at like the punks and freaks and the of there and of Haight Street. And he loved the people watching and thought it was like fun to ogle the ogles, but or ogle the oogles. Is it oogle or ogle? Oogles. Ogle
Oogles,
the oogles, yeah.
right?
And we thought it was great too, but what really happened is me and my brothers all ended up being like, they look so cool. And they get to listen to whatever they want because we couldn't. We had to listen to what our parents listened to. And I think that like started to plant a little seed. And then when my mom left the church, she divorced my dad, and the church was extremely displeased with her because it was her second divorce, and that's like very uncool in the Mormon religion. And she was rejected at church, but would still force me and my brothers to go. And my dad was too ashamed and sad to go. So me and my brothers were forced to go to church without our parents, which just kind of left us as being like easy targets to be fucked with and rejected, or to have like the adults and the bishop like guilt trip us and try to manipulate us into getting our parents back together. So that was like my first taste of feeling like an outsider and being like rejected and having to like operate and survive surrounded by people that like no longer understand you or respect you. So I feel like that was an early, really harsh lesson that made me be able to start embracing being different and surviving while not in a place where you don't feel like you belong. That was one. And then I think it was kind of all over when I was about, I'm a late bloomer. Truly, I'm a late bloomer with everything, but I grew up in Napa, California, where adults hate youth, especially in the 90s. And what we would do for fun, because there's nothing to do in Napa, in nighttime, was we would go to Hollywood Video and go to the cult classic section and just try to find something that looked weird or good or we've heard about. And we randomly grabbed a VHS tape of Desperate Teenage Love Dolls. Do
Amazing.
you know what it is?
Oh God, yeah. Well, the McDonald Bros, like I think it's the guy who directed 1991, The Year Punk Broke. It is Dave Markey directed 1991, The Year Punk Broke, which is the thing that got me into punk. So anything I saw by him, same sort of thing. I found it at my video store and loved it.
I didn't even know that that was him. That's amazing. I'm gonna have to rewatch that. But watching that like totally blew me away.
Awesome.
And I have like a lot of it memorized, and it became like our religion. We watch it all the time. And it made me be like, I didn't even know what Red Cross was. And then I found it, and then I just, back then I didn't have the internet, So I just had to remember that name forever and keep an eye out for it in all my magazines that I found, or if I found something like in a CD bin or a tape bin at the warehouse. And I eventually did find more Red Cross, and then much later found their like early punk stuff, and was like, this is it. This is Wet Paint mixed with I Have a New Way to Walk. This is my band. And I got really, really into Red Cross. So that was kind of, that was definitely like a beginning of fate of things for me. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, they don't want to be. I want to talk about all three. I'm trying to figure out, should I go reverse chronological order? I guess, no, let's go back chronological order. So I got to look up that Sesame Street punk song. Cause in Canada, this band Random Killing, they did a punk song that eventually got on Canadian Sesame Street. So the
punk, whoa, cool.
The punk Sesame Street connection is real.
I mean, it's music, and there's a lot of representation of like different personalities and different, I don't know. I love Sesame Street. I know there's some haters out there, but I love it. It's so artistic too. The old ones, you know, like what is Sesame Street? It's totally creative. I love it.
Yeah. There's like this sort of like Devo-esque quality to it, where Jim Henson in another life would be doing like the Gwar or the Devo of his time.
I mean, they probably, I bet Gwar was totally influenced by Sesame Street, whether they knew it or not.
Yeah, like I think that's one of those things, like that horrifying slogan, there's a little McDonald's in everyone. Or
I've never heard that.
It's terrifying to think about, but it's probably true in most cases. But like same with, but like Sesame Street's like the foundation of all of us, right? Like it's the main building block that you got as a young person. I guess maybe now it's different because my kids didn't really engage with it as much as they did like Yo Gabba Gabba. But for our era, like and before us, it was the thing.
Yeah, it's definitely important to me.
Where did the cow song, was that from Sesame Street too?
Yeah, it's all these like Muppets with like, I remember they have like spiky eyelashes, and it's, you know, like I think trying to be like the Supremes or, you know, the Chiffons or something.
Yeah, it's my kids started watching the Muppet Show, and so we started going through the Muppet Show and then going through all the songs on that, and they could write
so good.
Oh god.
The yeah. Roger Miller one is so good. The Mark Hamill one is so good. I love the Muppet Show.
The Paul Williams one's amazing.
Oh, Paul Williams, yeah.
It's did you ever watch Yo Gabba Gabba stuff?
No, but I have heard a lot of good things.
Paul Williams.
They tour and stuff, right?
I got to do a Dancy Dance, which I think was to this day the only thing I've ever done that impressed my 14-year-old. He was a very young child at the time, but pretty impressed. Pretty impressed.
That's great.
But now there's nothing I can do to impress him at all.
Yeah. You know, I give it a few years and you're going to be like his favorite person. So
I keep telling myself that every day in the mirror before he breaks down my soul. I should edit this out because if you ever do, it's going to be so pissed. Yeah, right. It's just being teenager and like, you know, like you're saying before, you don't realize as a parent what you're subjecting your kids to. Obviously, what you're being subjected to as a young person, to jump ahead to the next part of what you're talking about, having to go to a church where your parents have been shunned is pretty extreme. But you don't realize as a parent that like, oh, fuck, everything I'm doing is fucking up my kids and they're going to rebel and they're going to find a way to kind of like exist beyond me at some point.
Mm-hmm. That seems so tough because everyone's trying to, pretty much everyone I think is trying to do their absolute best. And there's so much to juggle. I mean, there's so much to juggle if you don't have kids and then you had these other little souls and you have to take care of them physically and mentally and emotionally. and prepare them for the future when I bet you still don't. I mean, I imagine you always feel unprepared personally. I doubt you feel like, well, I've got all the answers. Now I can give them all to my kid. You know, you're probably still figuring shit out too.
Oh God, yeah. Oh my
Yeah.
God, yeah.
Hopefully you are. We
Yeah.
gotta keep learning and reminding ourselves that we don't know everything.
And you don't realize how much of the trauma you suffered is impacting who you are as a parent. And I don't mean trauma necessarily,
Absolutely.
and not necessarily extreme, but like even just any sort of thing. Like I went through a lot. My parents got divorced, I think, between the two of them 4 times when I was a kid, 5 times between the, and by, so
Wow.
like, I definitely see how that's affected the way. And I had some weird step parents and like just sort of like trying to counteract the shit that was put on me. So I don't put it on my kids. And you're like, oh fuck, yeah, like that's, I got to address that shit. That's been a part of my personality for years. That's been coming out on people for years because I haven't addressed that.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
What was Mormon music like? Is it all like the Osmonds?
No, I mean Mormon music. I can't speak to anything that's like modern.
I meant for you, yeah, as a kid, like what were they allowing you to listen to in terms of music?
Oh,
Like,
I see, I see. Because in church we just sang Mormon hymns, and I really loved the super dark, sad ones. Like those are my favorite. And but we also like in primary school, that's like that's where the little kids go when the adults get split off, and there's like a men's group and then there's Relief Society, which is like the women's group. The little kids go to primary, and the songs we sing, like some of them, okay, my favorite one, and I'm sure it's impacted my music in some ways. My favorite one is called The Golden Plates. It's like sounds like doom. It I you should find it and like splice it into the show, because it's the like main part is like the golden plates are hidden deep in the mountainside. It's just like I don't know, it struck me and I loved singing that part when I was a kid. And then we also had songs about, like, there's a song called like Popcorn Popping on the Apricot Tree. I have no idea what it has to do with being Mormon, but any fellow Mormon, I'm collecting all these Mormon rockers, by the way, because I love talking to them. I feel like that's my only, the closest thing I have to culture is like that part of my life. And I love discussing all the like primary school songs with them. But anyways, what I was allowed to listen to was just things my parents liked. So oldies, like music from the like 50s, 60s, and 70s, and country from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then my mom started to get into like big country, which is making a huge comeback. Wild to see.
huge.
But yeah, she listened to like some like late 80s, early 90s country, like Clint Black, Dwight Yoakam, George Strait, very specific things. mostly country and like oldies, really. A lot of girl groups. Roy Orbison was like a regular in the house. Patsy Cline was a regular in the house. Marty Robbins, the Animals. A lot. And then when my parents got divorced, she got really into the Grateful Dead and Santana. That album with the man holding the dove on the front. It's actually, there's like some really good songs on that. And I wish I could remember, but that's like what we listen to. The Beatles, big Beatles house.
Okay, yeah, so it wasn't like they cut you off from hearing like secular music type thing.
Right. Yeah. She did not, we did not, but we were not allowed to listen to like hip hop, or I was not allowed to listen to any what were they called? New Kids on the Block. That was like too sexy. You could not listen to that.
I concur. As a parent, I concur.
Too sexy. Yeah.
Far too sexy with their Youth of the Day t-shirts on in those videos. I don't
Right.
know.
But then my oldest brother, he's 13 years older than me, and then I have a sister who's 18 years older than me. But my oldest brother, Jason, he started rebelling when we were all still little church kids and both our parents still went to church. He was not going anymore, and he was listening to whatever he wanted. And he listened to a lot of like what did he love? He loved like Accept. Do you know Accept?
Yes, that's awesome.
Man, he would like teach me and my, which was probably so cute for him to teach his little siblings. Because at this time, if he's 13 years older than me, I'm probably like five or I'm probably six, which means my little brother is probably three. And Dan's like, hey, he's teaching his balls to the wall and stuff like that. But a lot of Metallica, and we got me and my other brothers got super into Metallica because Jason loved Metallica and Slayer, and so and I still love the like kind of like more thrashy punky sides of Metallica and Slayer. Actually, Clams did a Metallica cover set one year for Halloween. We did Clamtallica.
That's
It
awesome.
was so hard.
Metallica and Slayer both have that kind of like slight punk hardcore. I guess Metallica wears it a little bit more on their sleeves, but like influence that shines through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's actually another like part of me becoming a little punk or something.
The Grateful Dead have that one garage rock song. That's Stomper, Cream Puff War.
I need to look up Cream Puff War.
It's awesome. It's on the first record. But that's
I
like the
probably
one.
know it.
It sounds like it's on should be on a Nuggets compilation. And if that was the only thing that came out by the Grateful Dead, I would say they were my favorite band, but
Ripple's pretty damn good.
yeah, they've got some songs, but I like there's a lot of baggage associated with that band, I think, as a kid.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Speaking of bands with one incredible song, the Osmonds' Crazy Horse. Had you heard that as a
Crazy
kid?
Horses.
Crazy
Yes,
Horses, that's it.
that was our walk-on music for a minute.
Killer track.
It's so badass.
Like, it makes you want a whole record. Because I remember hearing that song and then buying that album and being like, well, there's nothing really like this on the rest
What
of it.
happened?
Yeah.
Do you know what it's about?
Now, what's it about?
It's about pollution. It's about cars and pollution. Crazy
Oh.
horses.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Which segues perfectly into our mutual friend Stephen McDonald and Jeff McDonald as well, and Red Cross, who of course cover that song. And Red Cross is probably the world's greatest band.
So good. I've never met Jeff, or maybe I've like shook Jeff's hand, but I love Steve. He is another person that I've met that is like, oh, you are not ruining this for me. You are amazing. You're truly so kind and respectful and fun. And like, you're making me feel like I'm your peer. You know, he's such a nice, good guy.
Yeah.
I was really pleased with that. It sucks when you meet someone and they suck, you know?
It does. But then you meet Steven and it makes you like, how can other people that have like a smidgen of the pedigree and the resume cop tude when he's that cool?
Totally. Yeah. And I told him the same story about like finding, Desperate Teenage Love Dolls, and he loved it. You know, he like totally wanted to hear my story. He wasn't trying to escape or bored or something. He was like into it. He's cool.
Yeah, he's like one of the most genuine souls I've met anywhere in life. And the way he loves music is so pure, you know, like the way he supports younger bands and just like, I don't know. I just every interaction I've had with that guy, from the first time I met him, I've been like, "Fuck, this can't be this guy that was in Desperate Teenage Love Dolls and like played with Black Flag and all these wild like experiences. Like, how can they be this down to earth and this chill?"
Yeah, so down to earth, so chill. And I've played with them in a variety, of venues now, like. I've played with them like at big festivals where they're on a huge stage. And then have you played Siberia in New Orleans?
No. Oh, wait, oh. Wait, is it like a little corner in the back of it's like a little bar with a little tiny corner in the back?
No, you walk in and the stage is on the left and the bar is on the right, but they have this amazing mural on the wall. That was like, in my mind, it's like a ice world with like, I don't know, with like orc slayer he-man kind of dudes. Yeah. But I could really be wrong about that. It could have just been like a cool 70s spleefy ice mountain mural, and there could be no warriors on it. I'd be adding that.
Is it Matt Muscle's place?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know the place.
Yeah,
that dude is the wildest dude I think I've ever met in my life.
Have you ever seen his flipper tattoo?
No. I did see his, was it on his ass or his friend's ass where he had like, what's his name from Judas? Rob Halford.
Oh, I love Judas Priest. Matt Muscle has a giant, flipper tattoo on his belly. It's like his whole belly.
He showed up. I remember the first time we played New Orleans, he showed up to the show and he walks in, and this is just maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months after Katrina. And so this bar is like one of the few bars that's kind of reopened at this point. And he's in like a head to toe, like white outfit with giant white shrimping boots. And he goes, "My name's Matt Muscles. Timmy sent me here to get you guys fucked up." And I'm like, "Oh, you probably want to talk to the rest of the band over there." And he got them fucked up. He got like,
I bet.
It was a wild night.
Good at that. Yeah. It's always a wild night in New Orleans, no matter what's going on. It's always wild.
Yeah. It's like a city that just feels like, it's like a choose your own adventure novel. Every step you take where you're like, "Oh, if I went into this place, there'd be a whole set of things that could happen versus if I go down this street where it could turn out completely normally tonight."
Yeah. One time we had an Uber driver and he was like, he was really cool. He was rapping for us and then he gave us mushrooms. It was really wild. It felt like, okay, this is a really good New Orleans experience.
That is definitely the best New Orleans experience possible. All you need is Anne Rice and Trent Reznor to pop up. And
I would love that.
I remember like last time I think we played in New Orleans, which is Bruise Cruise kind of era, maybe a little bit after. We played with a band. I probably shouldn't say who, but at the show I hurt my back. And I'm like, do you guys have any like aspirin, Tylenol? They're like, oh, we got this painkiller. And next thing I know, I'm buck naked in the bathroom in the hotel, listening to Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Oh, shit.
Like, what the hell happened? How did I get here?
How was the pain, though? Was it subsided or?
Definitely subsided. I don't think I felt any more pain for the rest of the tour after that. It was, once again, a perfect New Orleans experience, I think.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
But where did you go after Desperate Teenage Love Dolls?
That was it. That made me start finding more music. Oh, I have one more thing to put in there. One more thing that, and I think then we have like a well-rounded, like this is the beginning, is my mom took me and a friend on a little trip to San Diego, and we were walking around the beachfront on Mission Beach, and we found a club that was 15 and up. We were 15. We're like, whoa, 15 and up club, let's go. And Head PE was playing. Do you know that band?
Yeah. I mean, they never got popular here, but I think they were kind of buzzed about in the States a little bit, right? Like,
I was really young, so like, I thought every band was huge, you know?
Yeah.
But I saw them play a bunch of times, like in California, in the Bay Area. And I was like, oh my God, Head PE's playing at this 15 and up club. We got to go. We went. They were opening for Soul Brains, who I had no idea who they were. And we watched Soul Brains. And then in the middle of the set, they played three punk songs. And I was like, what the fuck? This is amazing. This is my shit. I think this is the kind of music I like. So after that, I had to do what I did with Red Cross and just remember the name Soul Brains, Soul Brains, Soul Brains. So if I would ever go to a CD shop, that I could like look for Soul Brains, and I would dig through and find all these Soul Brains CDs and be like, this isn't that song that they called Sailing On. They don't have the song on. I can't find that one cool punk song anywhere. And then eventually I was maybe at Amoeba in San Francisco, and it had a card for the like section that said Soul Brains and Bad Brains. So I finally was able to find that album, be like, wait, this is all three of those punk songs that they played. They must've been a different band before. You know, it's like things were so much harder to find back then.
Yeah.
And then that was another part of my beginning.
It's interesting because like you're saying, like back then you couldn't, like, there's no way of finding out about these connective dots in these bands' careers because these would be separate sections. Like S and B are nowhere beside each other in the record store. So unless it's someone at Amoeba deciding like, you know, maybe someone might want to know that these guys also played in this other band, you wouldn't find out.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
I was talking about it with the guy, I think from the chats the other day, where like back then it was like we were in like an information desert where you had to like search for these little scraps of information, and that was the barrier of entry for getting into this kind of music, whereas now it's like an ocean of information and you're kind of drowning information, and to find
this
is hard in the opposite way.
Yeah, but I also have a lot of friends that like we're so connected to cooler music because they had like a local record shop, or they had, you know, they were able to get Maximum Rock and Roll or Razor Cake or something like that. Like that was nowhere near us. Like all Napa had was the warehouse, and it would just be like the popular music at the time. And then they did have dollar bins that my brother, Dan, I mean, he's taught me everything about music pretty much, but he would dig in there and find stuff. And I do feel forever changed by, he found a Paul Leary CD, The History of Dogs. Are you familiar?
Yeah. Paul was on the show and big fan.
I love Paul. I wrote to him in this MySpace days and was just like, I'm a big fan, Paul. Like, I probably make music because of you. And he was very nice back. But my brother got the History of Dogs CD, and he didn't know Paul's music either, because for the information desert we were referring to, but he was a big Butthole Surfers fan, and I became one too. I'm a big Butthole Surfers fan, but he just recognized his name from the liner notes and then got it. And we listened to it, and that album became like a regular occurrence in my house. This is when my mom gave up controlling our music.
I guess they're kind of like the Grateful Dead of punk, Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, totally. My brother actually had an amazing punk band called Violence Creeps. I don't know if you've ever heard them, but
They record? Oh, I gotta find this.
it's so good. And there's some music videos, but it's my childhood best friend Amber is the singer, and then my brother Dan is like the guitar player songwriter, and then my ex-boyfriend Max, who I referred to earlier from Uzi Rash and the Trashies, he played bass in there. But it was so good. I really wish that they would have like kept making music, but I think they had something come out on Total Punk.
Awesome.
But anyway, they're awesome.
Were they from Napa?
No, Oakland. Like
Was
I
it?
moved to
Oh, go on, sorry.
Oakland to go to college. And then both my bro my brother my both my two brothers that I'm really close with, Dan and Patty, excuse me, they eventually followed me and we're out there. They're both still there, actually.
Were there any punk bands from Napa or back then?
There's a band. I'll text Patty while I'm on the phone with you and he'll get back to me. But not really that I can think of. I will send this text out though.
It's so interesting in California, because I was just thinking about this today, because I was writing something like how certain towns took to punk. And I guess it probably had a lot to do with probably religion in some cases, or just like record stores and things like that. But there's certain places where, there's like dozens of bands, and there's other places where there's just not that much, especially at different points where there's almost like nothing, it seems.
People tried, I don't think punk was ever very big. There's definitely like this one punk band in Napa that's been playing for a long time and now they're in their 50s, but I know that they like played a lot in San Francisco. I just can't think of the name right now. It's a really gross name. But yeah, I wish I could think of it. We did have a record store for a little bit when I was young, when I first started getting more into getting my own music. Because my mom used to do these dumb things like buy me a stack of blank tapes and then buy Dan the CDs. And he was so mean when I was a kid, like at this time, where she'd be like, okay, Merry Christmas, Dan, remember you have to make your sister copies of all these CDs. And he'd give me this evil grin, and it's like, of course I would never get the tape, but I did steal the Weezer CD and make a copy of the Blue Album and was totally obsessed. And then he found it and was pissed that I stole a CD and erased all of my liner notes that I'd handwritten in.
Oh my God.
I know, he's such a punk. He's just like classic big brother for like 10 years or something. But oh God. Oh, I will give this cool punk fact about Napa is the Cramps played at Napa State Hospital, which I worked there for 6 years of my life, and my mom worked there from when she was like 16 till she retired this summer. This past summer, she retired at age 75. So she has worked there since the 60s.
Was she there when the Cramps played?
No, she she wasn't there when the Cramps played, which I don't understand how she wasn't there, but I think she was on maternity leave at the time. But she was so semi-conservative at the time. If she knew a band like that was playing, she would have called the fucking police. But my grandfather was the fire chief there for a long time. I have a lot of history at Napa State Hospital.
Wow.
So
would he have had to approve that event as the fire chief, like with some sort of fire permit or something? Or
no, they did this. This was very put on, very DIY. I don't think they got permission from anyone.
Because I looked into it. Yeah, because there was a podcast I listened to with, I guess it was an arts instructor there that somehow was involved. I can't remember. I got to reread this article or podcast or whatever I listened to that got the information for me.
Send it to me if you find it. I definitely take a lot of pride in that. But actually know so little. I would like to find out if that person still lives in Napa, whoever got the Cramps to play. I mean, that's amazing. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, I think
you could never get away with that now. It became so back then it was just mentally ill people or people who you know, back then they would lock you up if you were an alcoholic and try to give you therapy that way. Or if you had severe postpartum depression, you could end up in the state hospital. Or if you were mentally differently abled, I don't remember the current way to say that, but if you were differently abled, you would end up at the state hospital. And they just had different wards. They had a children's unit. You know, you had 5-year-olds and 13-year-olds and stuff all in the same area. But when I worked there, it had become a hospital for the criminally insane. So felony penal code patients. So really dangerous. It was you went through 2 security gates. There's a huge electrified fence around the whole thing. And yeah, it's different now than then. But my mom's seen it all. She grew up on the grounds because my grandfather was the fire chief in our grandmother worked there too. She had a bunch of different jobs, but they had housing for staff. It was a village back in the day. It was like its own mini city. And so lots of people that worked there lived on the ground. So my mom grew up there with all her siblings. And what's weird is this place is right across the street from my dad's house now. Still there. But I used to longboard to work.
Wow. That must have been a very intense place to work, I imagine. At any point, it sounds like it would have been an intense place to work, but certainly when you were working there.
It was intense, but I also loved it. I grew up going with my mom to work before it became strictly for criminally insane people. It was, you know, more open. She would bring me to work, which now I'm what is wrong with you? Why were you bringing me there? But she would take me to work with her sometimes. And when she would be on maternity leave, she would work part-time for her friend who ran a group home for developmentally disabled adults. And so I grew up around different types of people and felt comfortable doing that. So when I worked there, I loved the patients, the clients. I loved working with them. And my job was I worked in a grocery store cafe that served clients and staff so that it would give them, I believe that the purpose was sure to provide products and food and coffee and groceries and toiletries. But I think that the main idea was to give the patients a real life experience. So you feel like you're part of the world. You know, you're not locked away from society all the time. You have a social place to go gather and they're with staff too. So it's you could be eating a sandwich next to a doctor. But then we also trained clients to run the cafe. So most of my staff was criminally insane people, and they had to have a certain amount of clearance in order to work there and have to be close to being safe enough to release. So most of the clients I worked with were like, they were awesome and like hard workers and were grateful to have the job. And yeah, I liked it. The problem was the staff.
Yeah, I can imagine like you're dealing with people that maybe don't have the empathy or had the empathy at one point and maybe lost it in some cases. But yeah, I can imagine that would be a difficult thing to deal with when you got staff that you're not seeing eye to eye with things on.
Right. It's a state-run facility, and the state has made in just wild amount of cuts. And it's like the people who are affected are patients and all the staff there. But then, obviously, like teachers have suffered so many cuts too. And it's like that's where we need to be focusing our energy is like education and mental health, I think. And it's really sad when you can see like a patient slipping through the cracks because people don't care. I've had clients on my working at for the cafe, and you see them slip through the cracks, and then they eventually lose their job because they're the people who are in charge of their care are just like not don't give a shit about them, They're just there for their paycheck or whatever. But also because the state had made so many cuts, they would take like instead of hiring like people who are educated in mental health nursing, instead of having like five nurses on one unit, like five like mental health nurses, psych techs on one unit, they would have one and then the rest be LVNs that don't have any training with mentally ill people. And so that starts to make it more dangerous, and there's less education. People know how to work with them less and less. And so and they replaced, like I said, it's its own village basically. We had a full hospital police staff. But then they started to save money, these budget cuts, they'd have one hospital police and then like 10 security guards. And we all know that's a huge difference. And so it just became really dangerous and really super dangerous. And people just were not getting the care that they really needed, or the therapy. They would cut all these therapy programs. When I started, they had a music program and people fucking loved that. They had taiko drumming, which was like really good. Drumming feels good. I don't know how to drum, but I love to beat one drum. And it feels good. You're like connecting to a part of yourself that you can't just tap into walking around in life. So anyway, I went on a serious friggin' tangent.
No, I find it fascinating, especially because I find that performance of the cramps, it's up there. Like I think that and the crime at the at prison is are
Oh
the
yeah.
two most infamous punk performances, right? Like, I can't think of too many other ones. If you're on Saturday Night Live, maybe.
Oh yeah, that's right, Berkeley. Oh, my brother wrote me back. There's a band called Rude Intoxicant
Rude
that
Intoxicant. Okay, you got me digging on some stuff now. My Napa knowledge has got to fill in a little bit.
there's not a lot that yeah. There's not a lot coming out of there.
I'm interested to hear what your perspective is on that Cramps performance because I think over the years I've kind of like looked at it in different ways. And so, what were your takeaways when the first time you saw it, and when did you first see it even?
This is terrible. I haven't seen it.
You've never seen it? It's on
No,
YouTube
I've
now.
just, I know. I know. I think that's why I haven't seen it is because I want to be set up. I want the experience to be just right. And now I think that's like a weird excuse because I'm embarrassed that I haven't seen it. But yeah, I feel like I've seen it. I've seen clips. I've read articles. I've watched people talking about it. You know, it's kind of like, do you have any like classic movies or like a movie that is everyone, you know, like Repo Man or something where everyone around you has seen it and you're supposed to see it. And then eventually you're like, I don't know why I haven't seen it yet. It's too late for me. And I know it's not too late. But no, I weirdly haven't seen it all the way through. I've just seen clips of like patients dancing and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that's the thing. When I first heard about it before I ever saw it, I was like, oh, this is probably like super exploitive or this, that, or like the cramps or doing this for these motivations. And then once I saw it and saw the interaction between the performers and the people present, the people that live there, I realized like, oh, there's something really genuine about this thing. And you can tell the people there are having a good time and they're enjoying what they're seeing. And not that there's like necessarily a therapy component to it, but there is like this sort of really special kind of, I don't know. I find it an interesting performance. And then when you do eventually see it, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Like the whole way through, I mean. Not that you can't pick it up from these clips, I'm sure.
Yeah, from the clips I've seen, it what makes me feel good about it is I think I bet that the dude putting it on was like, this would be so fucking cool and weird, but it kind of doesn't matter because they were having fun. And I feel like bringing some normalcy or normalcy? Normalcy.
Normalcy,
Normalcy. Yeah, that's it. Into their lives, I think is what's gonna be really helpful. You know, I think it would be so isolating to live there and just have, you know, what the state is offering you, but to have a little slice of real life come in, you know, I think could be grounding, even though like the cramps isn't everyone's cup of tea. I remember seeing quite a variety of different kinds of people in the audience watching. You know, I think it would be like thrilling for anyone.
I don't know if the Cramps ever played on a cruise ship, but they did do 90210 in Napa State Hospital, so they kind of have us beat on that front, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Big, you're right.
But we got the cruise ship on them.
Yeah.
This has been awesome, and I this is taking far too long to happen. Anytime you want to come back on this thing, Shannon, you are always welcome.
Thank you. I mean, I would love to come back. I feel like I kept taking all these hard lefts and but I think they were all fun.
Oh, absolutely. That's what this podcast is built on.
Yes.
The hard lefts and the bereavements and the non sequiturs, because yeah, that's, I don't know, there's like a lot there, and obviously there's a lot more to get to. And anytime you want to do it, cruise ship or not, you're always welcome.
Thank you. So good to see you, Damien.
Thank you so much, Shannon, for coming on the show. And you heard right there, Shannon will be back for a part two. Check out this record, The Moon Is in the Wrong Place, Everywhere Now. An incredibly beautiful record. Check out all the stuff that Shannon and the Clams did and have done up until this point as well. Rest in peace again to Joe. Check out the stuff she did with the guy from the Black Keys. She's an incredible voice, an incredible songwriter, and just an incredible person. You heard it right there. Check them out on tour. They're on tour right now. Find those dates over at shannontheclams.com. And that is that. All right. I guess I go back to telling you guys what's on the next episode. No, let's keep it surprised. That's it for today's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues faced by Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights and stop hate and violence towards people of different races, faiths, identities, nationalities, because this isn't politics. This is just basic human rights. People deserve to be able to live free from hate and discrimination, to see so much hate and so much discrimination happening right now. It's important not to forget these things. Ceasefires aren't political. They're just basic human rights stuff. What someone chooses to do with their reproductive systems, that's just basic human rights stuff. So support organizations that are affecting positive change in your community. Get involved if you can. Speaking of getting involved, punk gets better when you get involved. Obviously a little less pressing. But anyone can do this shit. Start a band, start a fanzine, just write something. Anyone can do this. Sign your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you don't need them. Try meditating. If I can do it, anyone can. It's really, it took me a while, but it does help when you start doing it. And, that was it, right? That's what I normally say. If I forgot anything, I'm sorry. And I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store, or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards. Save big.